Thank you. Especially with these longer, richer texts, it's really beautiful to see what strikes different people in the room. Inevitably, I can only pick up on part of it, so it's a beautiful practice to start with. This is the second week of a sermon series, investigating, exploring, digging into the mystery we call God, and using as a methodology what theologians have called apophatic pathways, which is a negative way, saying what God is not, in order to open up space for reflection about what God is or who God is. And this week, the frame is God is not a distinct being like us, not an anthropomorphic representation. And I had as my foil in my mind children's books that often portray God more or less just like us, except like superhuman. And so I want to investigate that and end with a children's book that doesn't do that. So if you get sleepy during the sermon, then I'll read you a story at the end and you can go to bed. I want to start with what I call the Santa Claus problem. When I was little, I don't know if you did this or not, but when I tell you what I did, you can tell me if you did this. We had a chimney and a brick mantle, and I would just very diligently like work with my mom to bake cookies, put the cookies out on a nice plate, put a glass of milk there, and of course carrots for the reindeer. And I don't know who ate them, but I would come down in the morning and they were gone, just a few crumbs on the plate. It was a crisis for me when, during the 70s, if you remember this, some of you do, when we had the energy crisis and we put in a wood stove, and I was like, Santa is not going to make it. But nonetheless, I put out the cookies. The problem with that is this imagination that this person, Santa Claus, which is a kind of godlike person who delivers gifts to me, simultaneously is like magically everywhere in one night. Like there's a like us, but then this impossibility connected to it. And I think that about like this Santa Claus way of thinking about God. Like God's just like us, except like impossible. And it leads to other problems, just a couple of problems that show up actually in the biblical literature. One is that if God is like us, but not like us, then that God can like belong to us, like a tribal God, a warrior God, a God who like leads us into battle. And if you look at all the ancient agrarian empires, whether it's the classic one in the Bible is Pharaoh in Egypt. Like, it's a divine king who does represent that kind of worldly power. And that's not the kind of God we're talking about in Christian faith. And another problem with that kind of God is you can think that God, because God's like us, God also has a house, and so then we like make the easy connection. Well, God's house is the church, and so there's this cartoon that I love that I use sometimes when I'm talking about faith and daily life, where this little boy, I forget the name of the comic book, but it's like this whole family, and it's kind of like 50s suburban white family. Does anyone remember the name of that?
Family Circle,
yeah. Family Circle. And they're leaving church, and the priest is there shaking people's hands at the door, and the little boy is just at the door, and he's waving, "Bye, God, see you next week," which is also a mistake. But it's a mistake that comes from that creating God as a being kind of like us, except not like us. And I think it's interesting to note that that's a particular problem in Western Christianity. Eastern Christianity, Eastern Orthodoxy, doesn't tend to think of God in that way. And Eastern religions in general, don't tend to think of God, if they have a God image, in that way exactly. And in the West, it's clearly related to the way the Greco-Roman cultures envision gods, very much like us, except superhuman, kind of, but also fallible. And in the East, there's more of a concept of God as a force or an energy, and that force is relational. And so instead of saying, where is God, you might ask the question from that frame of reference, where is God happening?
Hmm.
Which I think is very interesting. And if you think about that in relationship to relationship, God, as Christians understand, God is relationship. Like there's an in-betweenness, a happening to God's very identity as God. And of course, in relationship to the world, God so loved the world. So where is God happening? God is happening in relationship to the world, in relationship to us, to all creation. So there's a way, I think, to, even within the Christian tradition, to say that's actually not the way lots of Christians think of God. We have other ways of thinking of God that are really beautiful and generative. And it's actually even, I was thinking particularly of Orthodox influenced Western theologian Rowan Williams, who was the Archbishop of Canterbury, and he talks about, in a kind of homey analogy, that God is like, I don't know if I can do this, but God is like electricity, and so God holds everything in its being. Like everything that is because God's present energy is there, holding it in its being. And so that's a very different image of God, this kind of constancy of electric connection, than thinking of like a superhuman being like Santa Claus. And it's actually something that's present in an interesting way in the Lutheran tradition. I was reading, this is a really beautiful book, maybe we'll do a study about it later. It's called Meaningful Flesh, Reflections on Religion and Nature for a Queer Planet. And there's a Lutheran queer eco-theologian named Jake Erickson, who I got to know at Yale. Actually, Emily Scott was there at the same time that Jake and I were there. And he was talking about the way Martin Luther imagined God as a presence behind masks in the creation, that we see and know God in everything. Like God is manifesting in all that is. And so we can see God and be present to God in all that is. One of his homey analogies would, he would say, God fills creation like wheat fills a sack. And if you've ever seen wheat in a sack, it's just like bulging out at the edges of the sack. So I think about like God just so present and full in our life in the world that there isn't a place where God isn't. And so we see and understand God like in this beautiful meal, you know, in the presence of each other's bodies in the space, the floor under our feet, like in all of that is the presence of God. And at the same time, it becomes hard to recognize sometimes, is that God or is that not God? Which is why Luther said we need sacraments, we're bodies, and we need bodily ways to know God is truly with us and for us and loves us. So God feeds us with bread and with wine, and God bathes us in the font, like we did with Leona this morning. And God, this isn't another sacrament, but it's a means of grace to us. We console and care for one another. And in doing that, we offer God to one another. God happens between us in our care for one another. And so Jake dwells on that as a way to sort of, in a sense, queer God and say God isn't this binary other to our present lives. God is like in and through all of us and all of creation, present to us in a very beautiful and alive way. And so that brings me to this interesting, complex encounter between Nicodemus and Jesus. And Nicodemus is a scholar and a leader who comes to him at night kind of like nervous to be found out that he's actually going to check out what this Jesus guy has to say. And he has a conception of who God is and where God is and what God does. And Jesus, in a sense, queers his understanding. Mm-hmm. Jesus plays with him by saying, well, you know, do you really know what you think you know? And I think the heart of it is when he uses the wind as an example, saying, actually, God is wild.
What?
God is wild. God is present in unexpected ways and goes where God will. And so it's more a question not of certainty, but of curiosity. Where is God and how is God present and showing up? And then he adds to that this conviction, like, and the presence of God is going where this desire of love is. That's the fundamental thing that he wants Nicodemus and us to hear. God so loved the world. Andy, you picked up the claim that Jesus did not come to condemn the world, but to save. And the Latin word for the root of that word save is to heal. To heal our understanding, our lives, our connections with one another, with creation, with God. So that wind blowing where it will is a beautiful way, I think, to talk about the sort of non-being of God, the way in which God is present in all kinds of ways, beautiful and wild, and our presence to that lets us experience God in as many ways as we can name. So that's what this book does, actually. It lets God be wild and diverse as our human experiences. And it's called In God's Name by Sandy Eisenberg Sasso, whose children's books about faith are some of the best I know. Mm. And I'll just read a few pages of it so you get the idea, and then we'll see what stories and experiences it evokes for you. After God created the world, all living things on earth were given a name. Plants and trees, animals and the fish, and each person, young and old, had a special name, but no one knew the name for God. So each person searched for God's name. The farmer, whose skin was dark like the rich brown earth from which all things grew, called God source of life. The girl, whose skin was as golden as the sun that turned night into day, called God creator of light. The man who tended sheep in the valley called God shepherd. The tired soldier who fought too many wars called God maker of peace. The artist who carved figures from the earth's hard stone called God my rock. Then the story goes that they were confused about so many names for God, and so they all came together around a pond by the end of the book, and they knelt by the lake that was clear and quiet like a mirror, and they all named the names. Each person who had a name for God looked at the others who had a different name, and they looked into God's mirror, and they saw their own faces and the faces of all the others, and they called out their names for God: source of life, creator of light, shepherd, maker of peace, rock, healer, redeemer, ancient one, comforter, mother, father, friend, all at the same time. And at that moment, the people knew that all the names for God were good, and no name was better than the other. Then all at once, their voices came together, and they called God one. I'll hold just a silence for you to reflect on this and then ring the bell and invite you to share stories and experiences that this evoked in you.